This is the Outlap F1 Podcast featuring America's own Cody, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap. What's up, Outlap F1 Nation? This is episode number 9. This is season 6, and you've got the Outlap F1 Podcast. It's the 2024 Japanese Grand Prix preview show. You've got Annie, and I'm joined by my fellow colleague and normal preview host, Cody, tonight. It is good to see you, sir. It's good to see you rocking the Red Bull cap. You're aiming for a bounce back this weekend, I gather?
Yep, we had one, and it was kind of nice, but I'm ready for the Red Bull Revenge Tour.
Well, that would probably be some smart money, and you know, we'll get into our predictions a little later. We'll see if that jives with all of that. But it's good to see you. We're recording this, I think, maybe 23 hours away from free practice one. So the weekend's coming at us pretty fast and furious. But if you found us, welcome along, as David Croft would say. You can find our show, as always, Twitter or X, whatever it's still called, Instagram, when it's running. I heard it was down earlier today. Discord, Reddit, and, of course, YouTube, at Outlap F1 Podcast is the handle there. If you like what you're seeing and you happen to be on YouTube, you can click a like and subscribe button. Or if you're on your favorite podcasting app, do us a solid, click the 5-star button. We've had to restart our Apple Podcast app, as you guys all know. So if you're looking for our show on Apple Podcast, all you got to do is just search for Outlap F1. It will take you to our old thread and our new thread. And if you follow the new thread, you'll get all the latest episodes as we post them. We would be most appreciative if you'd like to do that. You can email the show chatnow@outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. Website still under development, but coming back hopefully sooner than later. www.outlapf1.com will take you there. Outlap F1 Nation continues to step up and support us. Thank you so much to the following folks. Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quinton Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and of course, Jonathan Scott. If you'd like to become a member of the hashtag Outlap F1 Nation, you can see our link tree in our show notes. It's $1, $5. It's our anchor page. All goes into upgrading the equipment we already have, investing in some new equipment to try to make the show better and make our product a little bit better for you. So that's where it would all go. We would be most appreciative if you'd like to do that. You can also check out the good folks at Manscaped. Our code OUTLAP, OUTLAP, will get you 20% off and free shipping there. All right. So as we are normally we'll do, we'll start with the latest news. And we had actually a big picture, big story come through this week. Liberty Media, the owner of the commercial rights holder for Formula One, they have made an acquisition. So they have acquired probably the other biggest international racing series, I would say, on the planet. They have acquired a majority stake in MotoGP. And so what they've done is they've actually acquired an 86% share of a firm called Dorna, who is the owner and has the exclusive rights to the following. Look at all this. If you're a motorcycle fan, this is for you. MotoGP, Moto2, Moto3, MotoE, and World Superbikes. The good news, I think, for MotoGP fans, the independent body known as Dorna will remain an independent company under the Liberty Media trading stock. Its CEO, Carmelo, and don't ask me to say the last name, I've been treading it. CEO Carmelo will stay in his current position, and the Dorna headquarters will remain in Madrid. And like I said, they acquired about 86%. When this deal is set to close later this year, they're going to acquire 86% of Dorna for approximately $4.2 billion, with a B, billion dollars. Woo! Cody, first blush impressions on Liberty Media's big acquisition.
I think it's going to be a good thing overall. Liberty Media has probably seen what they've been able to get out of Formula One since acquiring the commercial rights to that. And I think it's done well for Formula One as well as Liberty Media. Formula One was kind of in a bit of a questionable state in the mid 2010s, and I think has become better and been able to reach more audiences, especially, you know, we see, at least I've noticed a lot bigger support for it in the United States here lately. So I think that Liberty Media being the commercial rights holder for MotoGP will also help them to reach a wider audience, which would be really great because I've never been personally a really big fan of motorbikes, but I did start to pay attention a little bit last year because I knew it was coming down to the wire between, what was it, the two of the Ducati riders.
Jorge Martin and Paco Bednaya.
Yeah, and it was coming down to the wire like the last couple races. So I did start to pay attention a little bit and found that I liked it more than I was expecting. It's really interesting to see just like the way that they ride those bikes through the turns. It's insane. It looks really dangerous. Those guys probably have a bit of a screw loose to do what they do, but it just makes it all the more amazing. And I'd be interested in watching it more in the future. And as you were telling me before the show here, there's kind of a little, you know, bubble in Europe of big MotoGP fandom, but it doesn't have quite the same reception outside of that. And I think that this acquisition will really help them to reach that wider audience.
Yeah, I think I wrote three kind of big points, three big positive points, I think, of this acquisition. Number one, Liberty Media is going to bring some commercial know-how, because I think in terms of dealing with the venues, and a lot of times you have venues that some host both F1 and MotoGP, some are just exclusive MotoGP. But it always seems to me when they're trying to do their scheduling, that MotoGP is always kind of the last dog at the bowl when it's dealing with these venues. They want to get the F1 schedule first, and then they kind of give whatever's left over to MotoGP. So Liberty Media coming in with some cachet in their back pocket, some way to better negotiate the fee structures, whatever all that's going to be, that's going to help that series, I think, overall to get some more money into the door and not be beholden to some of their venues. Now, you have different some safety requirements between F1 and MotoGP that those are going to have to be addressed regardless. But I do think that just in terms of getting the schedule right, MotoGP is going to benefit from that in a very, very big way. The other thing you kind of mentioned, I would say right now the fan base for MotoGP is very European. It's very Spanish-based. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but they have aspired in recent years to try to be more global. They test in Malaysia. There's been races in Thailand. There's been races in Argentina. And they've had issues with some of those venues because those tracks don't get raced on anywhere else. So there's nothing else happening. So when they actually try to bring the MotoGP riders in, the racing line that actually rubbers in is ridiculously thin. I remember watching one of the races in, I think it was Thailand, and they were saying how anybody who goes offline is basically going to like crash out because the grip between online and offline was so, there was so much of a disparity. It was almost impossible to race. And therefore you almost saw almost no overtaking in that race, even though the track layout looked like it would support motorcycle racing a whole lot. So that's something that if they can work with the venues and get more events in some of these places, support events, maybe standalone Moto E events or something like that to fill these up throughout the course of the year, that's going to make for a better overall, I think, MotoGP product. The third point, TV access. Oh my gosh, does this need some help, especially in the United States? Now, they've just signed this for this season, a deal with TNT Sports. So if you were looking for your MotoGP and you couldn't find it, it used to be with NBC. And what NBC did was they kicked them to the end of the bowl. You think IndyCar gets pushed around by NBC. Well, wait, you were MotoGP. They were tape delayed on a cable network that, yeah, a lot of people had CNBC, but you had to go find it, and it wasn't, even the tape delay wasn't necessarily on at the same time every weekend. So if, unless you were really, really looking out or looking for it, it was very hard to follow in the United States without their premium TV package, which they have an app. It's a nice app. You get a great thing. But guess what? For F1 TV, it's what, like $70 for the whole season? These guys wanted $150 US for, yeah, you get a lot of races. You get Moto 2, Moto 3, all that other good stuff. But that, you know, the same thing like you get for F1 TV, it's almost double the price. So you had to be a really committed fan to really go find this out, to go and see what's great about MotoGP. And there's some really great things about it. I mean, in the last few years, they've developed some aero fins. You've seen kind of the flow down of some F1 technology, not necessarily ground effect or anything like that, but you've seen aero and how the tires work, and you know, you've got teams rising and teams falling. And there's things that MotoGP, I think, will in turn be hopefully be able to teach Liberty Media, and by its nature, Formula One. One of the things that MotoGP really does really good, well, guess what? If you're a struggling manufacturer, they give you more testing time. They give you an opportunity to develop your bike in the middle of the season. I mean, Honda, which was a championship-winning bike for a lot of years with Marc Marquez, has struggled mightily in the last couple years, in the last couple evolutions of their formula. And so what they've been able to do is they have a – F1 does it with wind tunnel time. These guys do it with on-track testing, where you actually have test drivers on test tracks. They give Honda more time to do it, and they let them develop throughout the course of the season. So your overall competitive order is still pretty strong throughout the course of the year. And guess what? Honda's come out in the last couple, the first couple of races of 24 and have looked a lot better. You know, they've come almost pulled what McLaren did last year, where they were dog crap at the beginning and now they're not so bad. So, I mean, but you've had that in mid-season, which you almost never see. You almost never see that in Formula One. So there's a lot of things that I think they're going to be able to learn from each other. I'm very happy that the current leadership at Dorna is going to kind of stay where it is, at least for the initial part of this. It's going to be interesting to see who they move into those roles, if those change at all. But yeah, I think this is a good thing for both. I don't want to see Liberty try to get involved with the technical regulations, because right now I don't think they're broken. MotoGP has some really good racing, but they need more teams. They need more recognizable faces out there. They got to let some new fans in beyond, you know, the under the helmet kind of bit. But there's a lot of things that I think are going to be really good for both here.
How much has Liberty Media gotten involved in the regulations for Formula One?
Well, don't forget they had it with you had people at the FIA that were kind of employees of Liberty Media, and you kind of had that. You didn't know where one stopped and one started. And so as long as they can, and I think that was something that I would think under this, they would want to choose to avoid. So, yeah, I mean, in general, they haven't. But the other thing is these both series are governed very differently. The teams have a lot bigger say in F1 than they do with MotoGP. So, you know, they're going to have to learn all of this new dynamic. It's a different dynamic. And I don't think you can just rubber stamp what works in F1 for MotoGP. But I do think there are some ways to get some synergies across both of these. And like, I'm hopeful if this works the way that it's intended, that both learn from each other and both series benefit from it.
Okay.
All right. So our next story here, some technical changes at my favorite team that landed. And this was kind of a shocker. McLaren announced, I think it was yesterday, that David Sanchez has left the team after just 3 months. The quote he gave out on about this in his statement was, quote, "The role we envisioned and had agreed to was not aligned with the reality of the position I found." So it sounds like it's been as amicable a split as you could have. There's no gardening leave. David Sanchez is basically now a free agent. He can sign with any team and report to them immediately. As a result of this move, Andrea Stella will assume the Sanchez role, at least on an interim basis, of technical director of performance. A guy in the McLaren camp by the name of Rob Marshall, who's the guy who came over from Red Bull a couple years ago, he now assumes the role of chief designer. And another McLaren stalwart, Neil Holdy, will assume the technical director of engineering role. And that was not the only change. It was also announced, I think, today that Emanuele Pirro will be leaving the team after he was the overseer of the McLaren Young Driver Development Program. So I think that's going to move to somebody. I think the Carlin. I think the last name is Carlin. So I think that's kind of why he's leaving for that. But yeah, you never like to see technical shakeups 3 months into a season. But Cody, what's your take?
I got to be imagining that it's a little scary considering McLaren is doing really well right now. So you would think that whatever they had going was doing the trick. And yeah, now that you're shaking this up, and it's kind of weird for him to leave right after such a short period of time. 3 months is nothing. And I believe I read too that he said he thought that the role would be more involved and challenging, I think is what he said, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was something like he didn't think he was being stretched.
Yeah, he didn't think he was getting quite as much like into it as he was hoping for, which I thought was kind of, you know, interesting too. Like, what would they do, like put him in like a figurehead or just like full on like supervisory role or something there? But yeah, a little weird to leave right away. McLaren is kind of known for doing weird like management structures and stuff like that too. So who knows what they got cooking back there? But it definitely doesn't look good for him to leave that quickly. But like you said, amicable split. You know, maybe it's not so much of that it was bad, it just wasn't what he thought the role was going to be, and he's, you know, venturing out to see if he can find that role somewhere else. And if that's the case, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of would take it when I first read it, I was like, oh wow, you know, that's really surprising. I mean, this was a major league get. He was the head of car concept for Ferrari, and you know, I was kind of hoping that he would come in and kind of give some of that magic pixie dust, you know, over here. But look, I mean, if he wasn't happy in the role, I'm kind of almost glad they would rather do it now than leave him there, try to see out the season with maybe a guy only putting 70%, 80% effort. You know, if you're not happy in your job, you know, I mean, there's the term that's out there, silent quitting. You didn't want to see that because that then in turn would have affected next year's car or something like that. So if it was, and again, it sounds like they had some very open, honest discussions, probably some sort of a 90-day review. And it kind of came out that he probably thought it, from what it sounds like, he thought the job was X and it was really Y. Okay. You know, everybody's being, I think, as much adult about it as they can. And they're just saying, hey, probably the best move is to do a split here. And the fact that there's not going to be any guarding leave or any sort of issue with him going somewhere else tells me that this was about as amicable as you could be, because there's no like trade secrets that they wanted him to be guarded against.
Was there long enough to
yeah, maybe
memory or something.
Yeah, maybe. And the Emanuele Pirro thing, I think is a move, or I'm sorry, the Emanuele Pirro, I want to get that right. I think it's more a move of, he sounded off also in his statement that he was satisfied with what he did. So I think he kind of created and started it. And I think he's handing it off. I think it's Stephanie Carlin. And that's the Carlin that's, you know, in the F2 parlance. So I think they're in good hands with somebody with a Carlin name overseeing young drivers. That seems to make a whole lot of sense. So I don't think that that's necessarily a bad move there. But, you know, again, it's just kind of odd kind of timing. But, yeah, I guess that's just kind of how that cookie crumbled. All right. So our last story before we kind of get into the Japanese GP proper concerns some big updates actually on the cards for one Aston Martin. And of course, we'll see the show and tell report, and this will totally prove me wrong. But I am suggesting, I have seen some confirmed reports that have said there's supposed to be new beam wings and, very important for Aston Martin, a new floor design. So this is said to be very critical for their 2024 development aspirations. Aston Martin had shown some really good one lap pace, but some really kind of mediocre race pace. I think in terms of the top five, they currently find themselves at the bottom of that top five, in fifth place in the constructors. So and we're hoping big things for Juan Fernando and Lance Stroll.
I'm got my fingers crossed. I'm excited that we're getting some upgrades a little earlier than I was expecting, like a new floor upgrade. That's definitely a big deal. And we weren't really expecting to see any significant upgrades for a couple more races yet. So it's good to see someone bringing something. I'm also happy that it's Aston Martin, because they're, you know, kind of flirting with the back of the front pack. And it was so exciting last year when Aston Martin was like, you know, best other than Red Bull there for a bunch of races. And you're seeing Fernando Alonso on the podium all the time. And it was really cool and exciting. So I would love for them to make big steps here. The problem is they tried to make big steps like this in the season last year, and it went so poorly that they ended up reverting back to the older spec of car. So I'm really hoping that in the off season here, they've, you know, figured out some things with testing and the development program a little better, that they're more confident their upgrades that they're bringing are going to actually be significant improvements this time around. Because if the car gets worse and they just revert back to the old car, it's going to feel like that same song and dance where they start off well, and then they can't, you know, put it together throughout the season to keep up with that development race, which we know is really important, especially when, you know, the competition starts to get tough. And they're right there, you know, maybe on pace, maybe slightly better than Mercedes sometimes, but it's close between them right now. And they definitely want to make that step up to start competing with, you know, Ferrari and McLaren.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is, it's been moved up, which is, it's important in that you have to remember kind of the schedule is not favorable to the next two rounds, because the next two rounds after this one are sprint weekends. And so you don't necessarily want to bring a huge development package to a track that you literally only have 60 minutes to try to optimize the setup on, when you're not sure necessarily, even if what you thought you had in the wind tunnel is going to sort of work in the races. So it's important to try to get that done here. This is a track that has a lot of, you know, good kind of corners. It's very high speed, but if that's where you're lacking, it's a way to try to see if you can kind of get back in the game a little bit here. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen. Usually, like in all things Formula One, once one does it, everybody else reacts to it. And hopefully that will mean some other places can get their upgrades moved on a little bit quicker. So yeah, interesting to see. We're only four rounds in, and the development race has pretty much already started, and we're not even done with the initial flyaways yet. So that bodes well, I think, overall to what the championship could be if we get some other contenders moving up the chain a little bit. So I hope it works out for them. One last story before we head on in. I did get confirmation on this. For all you Williams fans out there, they will be running two chassis this weekend. I actually saw Logan Sargeant's chassis. They put out a tweet about it just an hour or so ago. So it's there. It's fixed. Alex Albon's chassis is fixed. There is no spare one, however, so they have to be very careful. So we could end up with that whole scenario playing itself out again. But everybody knows that, and that is just, it's a known thing. So good luck to both of the Williams drivers this weekend.
I got to wonder if we're going to see Williams kind of more toward the back of this race, just because the team's telling them, don't do anything crazy, don't destroy the chassis, just baby it through qualifying, and we'll see what happens during the race.
Yeah, but they can't afford to. That's the other thing, though. You know, if you the second you do that, you've pretty much lost. So I don't think they're there.
If you've only got one car in the race, you've lost half anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's a painful conundrum to be in. I don't envy James Vowles for having to make those decisions. I think they'll know that, and I don't think they'll be trying to send it in practice. I think I would much rather. If I was just James Vowles, I would say, well, if you crash the car and we can't race it in because you did something dumb in practice, that would annoy me quite a bit. If you did it in qualifying because you were trying to eke out lap time and thought maybe your delta was right on the cusp of maybe going from Q3 to Q2 or Q1 to Q2 or Q2 to Q3, I would almost call that worth it. You know, that's a go for it type of attitude. I could see that. But yeah, it's still a house of pain that they still have to work themselves out of.
do have a quick question for you. If say Albon is the one that bends it again and destroys the car, do you think for the second race in a row they give Logan's car to Albon, or do they keep with Logan this time?
God, I don't know. I can't imagine that they'd want to destroy him any more than they already have. If it was Albon that bent it, it'd be a really hard decision. I would say that you got your one pass and that was it. Williams, I think, saw an opportunity to try to score points. They came home in P11. This is not a track that I would venture to say probably suits them anyway. There's no long straight here. There's nothing. Even if you're trying to redo your whole car concept, I don't know what Williams's car does really well yet. I haven't seen that, you know, shake out. So it would depend, you know, what the characteristics of the car and who I thought could get more lap time or more performance out of it. I don't think, after doing what they did to Logan Sargeant last time out, I doubt they would want to try to do that again.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I think at this point they'd have to say, look, you know, we gave you his car last race. You destroyed the car again. Like, we got to let him have a go at it this time, or else he's going to have no confidence left.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an important weekend for Sargeant. He's got to go in and got to put all that behind him. That's a very hard thing to ask anybody to do, much less a guy with not a whole lot of experience yet at the F1 level. So yeah, interesting things that we're going to be watching for all throughout all the course of the weekend. So it's not always just the race in the front. Sometimes the race at the back is just as dramatic. So we will tell you when and where to watch your F1 on the other side of a quick break. We will get into our Japanese GP track facts. We'll talk about what we think is going to happen. We'll preview the weather. And yeah, we've got a whole bunch left to get into. So come on back and we'll hop into it.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop. Grab your flu powder, broomstick, or apparate to your favorite audio streaming service to join the discussion on Hogwarts, a podcast, where Dan and his friends have in-depth chapter-by-chapter breakdowns of each Harry Potter novel. Join the group as they dive into the magical world and discuss plot points, analyze character development, and occasionally go off the rails. Whether you're a muggle who's new to the series or a pure-blood wizard who won't need a remember-all, Hogwarts, a podcast, brings everyone to the Great Hall for a magical discussion. Hogwarts, a podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. This is season 6. This is episode number 9 of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's our 2024 Japanese GP preview show, and you've got Andy, and I'm along with Cody tonight. And we're going to hop into, we're going to drop our green flag, and we're going to hop into our track facts brought to us by the good folks at Pirelli Motorsport. So, Cody, tell us about the Suzuka Circuit.
This weekend, we're going racing around the Suzuka International Racing Course located in Suzuka, Japan. One of, I believe, two racing courses that Formula One has raced at in Japan over the years. Number of laps around this circuit is 53. Track length on this configuration is 5.807 kilometers, which is 3.608 miles, and consists of 18 turns. Tire selection from Pirelli for the race is C1 for the hard, C2 for medium, and C3 for the soft, so harder compounds of tires. And the Pirelli track characteristics are a 3 out of 5 for traction, 3 out of 5 for asphalt grip, 4 out of 5 for asphalt abrasion, 3 out of 5 for track evolution, 5 out of 5 for tire stress, so very stressful on the tires, 2 out of 5 for braking, 5 out of 5 for lateral load, and a 4 out of 5 for downforce. The qualifying lap record was set in 2019 by Sebastian Vettel with a 1 minute 27.064 seconds, while the race lap record goes to Lewis Hamilton, set in the same year, 2019, with a 1 minute 30.983 seconds. Most wins under at any track in Japan goes to Michael Schumacher with 6 wins, followed by Lewis Hamilton with 5 and Sebastian Vettel with 4. While most constructor wins at any track in Japan is goes to McLaren with 9, so quite a few from them, followed by Ferrari with 7, and a tie between Mercedes and Red Bull with 6 each. What's the circuit like, Mindy?
All right, I love this line. Show us a driver who doesn't love Suzuka, and we'll show you a liar. The high-speed track remains one of the ultimate driving challenges, with the snaking S-curves, the two commitment-rewarding Degners, and the white-knuckle ride of 130R, all highlight in a series of highlights at one of F1's most seminal tracks. And hey, it's got a crossover. That's always cool, right? All right, and as for the weather, we're going to do a three-day breakdown of the weather because I thought for a minute it was a sprint weekend, but it's not. But I've got 3 days worth of weather in here. So for Friday for practice, it's going to be mainly cloudy, high of around 65, winds out of the east-southeast at 5 to 10, a 15% chance of rain. For qualifying on Saturday, overcast with a high of 64 degrees Fahrenheit. Winds will be light and variable, so seems pretty ideal to me. Chance of precipitation, a little bit higher, 20%. For Sunday, best chance we might skip to actually see some rain tires this year so far. Rain showers in the morning, becoming more intermittent in the afternoon. Of course, it's the afternoon when they go racing. High of around 68, but the winds will be light and variable. The chance of rain, 40%. All right. So we will just hop right into our predictions game. It's a choose your champion predictions game. And I think we're all tied up. Or no, you're on me 2-1. You've got 2 weekends to my 1, right?
Yes, right. We're not running away with it, which is a good thing. You know, like a close competition.
I pulled a Carlos Sainz and, you know, got off the deck and actually won a thing. So, you know, I'm going to try to make it 2 in a row. Here we go. So we will start with the pole sitter. Cody, I'll let you go first. Is the Max Revenge Tour starting on Saturday?
Yes, it is. I haven't seen anything indicative of the Red Bull dominance actually going away. I mean, we didn't really see enough of Max Verstappen and the Red Bull in Australia to be like, oh, Ferrari caught up. And I've heard a lot of people saying, I think we might have even mentioned this on the podcast after the last race, that, oh, some people thought Carlos Sainz might have actually been able to put the fight to Verstappen, even if he stayed in the race. And I'm not really sure I agree with that. He was only in the race for 3 laps. So I think there's a good chance that maybe it would have been closer. I think Verstappen still probably would have won, though, had the engine, or not the engine, the brakes, stayed in one piece. So it's a long way of saying that I think that Red Bull still has the dominant car, and Max Verstappen is the best person to drive it. So I'm giving him a pole here.
My counter to that is I would have loved to have seen that fight. I don't know if we would have gotten it. I don't think we'll ever know because we can't ever go back and replicate those situations again. But I would have loved to have seen that fight. So hopefully we get actually a bit more of a fight here. But I do think over one lap, I do think this is Max Verstappen's playground. He loves the seminal tracks. He's great here. He's great at places like here in Brazil that have those tight, twisty corners that are kind of high speed. It favors this type of driving style he likes to do, which is a pointed front end. So, yeah, I think the Max Revenge Tour at least starts here on Saturday. So I've got him taking the pole as well. All right. So our qualifying pole lap from last year was a 128.877. We did the thing last time where we actually got really, really close and couldn't separate it. So Cody, what do you have for lap time here?
I have Max Verstappen getting the pole lap time going. I mean, as we have with all the tracks so far, it seems that the cars have evolved quite significantly, and the cars are quite a bit faster than last year. So I'm going with a 1 minute 28.151 seconds. And just a quick note to anybody who enjoys watching the car onboards during the race or qualifying, I will say that Suzuka is one of the most, in my opinion, one of the most satisfying tracks for car onboards. It looks really cool from the driver's perspective going around the circuit. So if you enjoy that sort of thing, I'd highly recommend watching them during qualifying.
I would completely agree. And a note to ever is doing the direction of the onboards. Here's one camera I don't want to see while the cars are running on the track. I don't want to be looking at the driver's face mask. That is completely useless. Yeah. I want either the overhead or the one with where it's just off to the side where you can kind of see the undulation and the S curves and all that other stuff. Yes, totally agree. Mm-hmm. I jacked up for that, especially for qualifying. That said, I do agree with you that I do think the cars this year are definitely faster. I don't know that we're going to necessarily see a track record, but I do have it close. We're not that far off. We'll have to see if what our deltas are again. I'll have to break out my fancy, fancy dandy spreadsheet, but I got a 128.005. Okay, so now turning to the race on Sunday, our podium from last year was Max Verstappen taking the win, Lando Norris coming in second, and Oscar Piastri, double podium for McLaren last year. Do we see more of the same this year? Cody, what's your thought on the podium?
I don't think we're going to see a double podium for McLaren just yet. They're pretty clearly behind Ferrari here at the start of the season, even though they're starting off much better than they did last season. They've got some gap to fill in there. Maybe if Japan was closer to the end of the season like it was last year, maybe we would see that double McLaren podium. But I've actually got the double podium going to Ferrari this time, and I'm probably gonna be cursing myself on Sunday, because every time Sainz has a really good performance, I'm like, man, he's really good. And then it comes to the podium and I'm like, no, surely the Leclerc is going to get the higher position, and then I end up being wrong. But I'm going to attempt that. I've got Verstappen winning the race, of course, and then I've got Charles Leclerc coming in P2 and Carlos Sainz coming in P3.
Okay, so this is where whenever I have Carlos Sainz doing well in the race, it's usually a bellwether for something bad happens to that guy. So I'm really hoping that this time we're gonna buck that trend. I do have Max Verstappen coming in P1. I have Carlos Sainz riding that wave. Sign that boy. He's quick coming in P2. And I've got the whole Carlando thing happening on the podium this time. Lando Norris in McLaren coming home in P3. I do think this is, of all the tracks pre-upgrade, I think this is the one that's going to suit them the best. So this is the one where I think they don't need any help to get a podium. That said, I'm hoping that that's where it comes in. Also because it's very difficult to overtake here, and I think it's going to come down to qualifying, and I think that's where Lando might be able to be a little bit special here because he loves this track as well. All right, so now we'll look at the fastest lap and the driver who's going to do that fastest lap. Last year's fastest lap time was a 134.183, and that was set by one Max Verstappen. So I'll go first on this one, and I do think we'll see a Max Verstappen fastest lap. It'll probably happen on the last pit stop, right when he's on that hard tire on the third or fourth lap on that stint, and then he'll shut it down. And I do think it'll be faster than last year. I've got a 133.287. Cody, what's your thought?
I have the fastest lap even a little bit faster than that. I've got it as a 1:32.963. So I do think we're going to break into the 1:32 for the fastest lap. And I've actually got it being set by Charles Leclerc. I think he set the fastest lap in Australia. And I think we might see that again where Verstappen's kind of, you know, hopefully not pulling too far off into the distance, but Leclerc decides he's going to try to nip that extra point by going for the fastest lap right at the end.
And that could be, at least at this point, it's a relevant point because the driver's is actually right only 4 points. So, you know, hey, go get them. So, you know, we'll have to see kind of how that all plays out because this is now suddenly an important thing to go try to go get. All right. So, moving on to our bonus picks, we've selected P9, P10, and P11. So the back end of the points, this is always, I think, where there's a whole lot of fun. There's usually a lot of drama. All right, so what do we have happening here? Cody, I'll let you go first.
I am a little sad to say I've actually got Lewis Hamilton coming in P9. He has not had a great start to the season. He seems to be struggling more than Russell with the Mercedes car, which itself is not top tier at the moment. And I think at this point, you were talking about quiet quitting a little while ago. I think no matter how much he says he's not going to do that, and he's 100% a Mercedes driver through this season, I think we might start to see, you know, subconsciously that start to happen a little bit, because, you know, if he feels like he's not got the car to perform well, I think he's going to, you know, probably not, I don't think he's going to stack up to Russell this season, because he's, you know, thinking of the future no matter how much he says he's not. So yeah, long way to say Hamilton coming in P9. I think Yuki Tsunoda is going to wrap up the points in P10, which would be fantastic, seeing him getting some points at home. And then I think Hulkenberg is going to be P11, just missing out.
I actually really like your Hamilton pick for P9 for a lot of reasons, because a lot of the stuff I've read about where the Mercedes car is lacking is high-speed corners. It's almost like if you took the McLaren and the Mercedes and you combined them, you'd have a Red Bull. Because where does the Mercedes car work in? The low speed, high, you know, long, windy corners where the McLaren struggles like crazy in. Where is the McLaren great at? High speed, quick, jerky corners, of which this track has a lot of them. So this could be a house of pain type moment for Mercedes. I have to agree with that. I don't know that it's going to be all the way down in P9, though. I do think they'll because they're in the top 10, I think they'll be like 7th and 8th or something like that. But I'm gonna say it's time for Kevin Magnussen to earn part of what he's getting paid. Otherwise, his seat is definitely going to come into some question. And, you know, Haas will go well here. They've got a Ferrari power unit. I could see them pulling off, you know, some good strategy and trying to get another point or two out of here. So I've got him in P9. Yuki Tsunoda, I think, brings home another point for the VCARB team here. And I think just missing out, I've got Lance Stroll in there, mainly because he's Lance Stroll. I don't think we're going to have the Aston Martin upgrades be a disaster, but I do think Fernando Alonso will probably be solidly somewhere in the points. I just think something will happen that Lance Stroll will be Lance Stroll, and he'll end up in P11.
I can see that.
All right. So our last bit for predictions, our prop bet. Do we see... So the question is, will we see wet tires on the race on Sunday? We talked about it in the weather. We've got some showers in the morning, supposed to clear off by the time the race starts, but we're not sure how intermittent, how real is that rain threat. We'll find out when we get there. But Cody, do you think we're going to see wet tires intermediate? I don't think we'll see full wets, but do we see the inners at some point over the course of the race?
I'm pretty sure we will. Well, 40%, pretty decent chance, and the chance for showers in the morning, you could run to the track being wet at the start of the race, and that might be enough for some drivers to you know, take a chance, start the race on inters. We've seen some really, really wet races at Suzuka, so I think it's perfectly reasonable to think if there's a chance of rain, there's a pretty good chance for inters at least.
Yeah, and the thing with just where Suzuka is, it's right by the sea anyway. So when it gets wet, and I looked at the winds are supposed to be almost non-existent. It's a very heavy air. It takes a long time for that place to dry out unless it gets very sunny very quickly. I don't see anywhere for really the water to go. So based on that, I think we'll actually do see inners at some point. It will probably be declared a wet race, which means that the tire strategy will go completely out the window. And Lord only knows what we're going to see after that, which will lead to the excitement and add another element to this. So I'm in on seeing the intermediate tire for the race on Sunday. All right. So before we hop on out of here, we just wanted to kind of recap when and where to watch your Formula One this weekend in the United States. As always, F1 TV is a great option if you wanted to do that. Their coverage is very good. I'm enjoying it very thoroughly. If you want to find it on your ESPN family of networks, it's kind of going to be all over the place because Friday, I think, is the last game of the women's NCAA basketball tournament. And I think they're doing a mega cast of it on ESPN. So a lot of their networks are all over the place. So Thursday is FP1. It will kick off 10:25 p.m. Eastern. That will be on ESPNU. FP2 is 1:55 a.m. Eastern. That'll be on traditionally ESPN2. Friday, FP3 kicks off 10:25 p.m. Eastern. That's on ESPN News. Qualifying just on Saturday starts 12:55 a.m. Eastern on ESPN2. And for your pre-race and race coverage on Saturday/Sunday, your pre-race will start at 12 a.m. Eastern on ESPN2. That will then switch to ESPN right before the lights go out at 12:55 a.m. Eastern. And, of course, the race, you will be able to find 12:55 a.m. Eastern on ESPN. So this will actually have a race on a Sunday, but Sunday just in this country. Some of us will still have it on a Saturday night. But, all right, I guess that's kind of the end of our rundown. Cody, any final thoughts as we gear up for the weekend?
Oh, just remembering how late the qualifying and the race are going to be on. And I've always kind of had a little bit of a trouble deciding whether I prefer getting up really early for the races or whether I prefer staying up really late for the races. I think at this point, it's kind of like getting up early. It's almost kind of like waking up on Christmas morning. You wake up and you're like, ooh, there's Formula One.
I don't know. I mean, what I did for Australia, I didn't have to do a power nap. It just kind of happened that I was just wide awake for that anyway. So I'll try to do that as best as I can. So stay tuned to us throughout the course of the weekend on all our social media channels. If any new big news develops over the course of the weekend, we will do our best to break it for you. But we'll be back more than likely Sunday evening, I would imagine, to do the review. Got to see who's all going to be on it. Deanna has an open seat if she can make it happen, but we'll have to see about that. So, we'll get our review out as soon as we can. But, until then, enjoy the Japanese Grand Prix weekend. It's a great track. If you've never seen it before, make an appointment to watch, especially the qualifying. If you don't watch anything else, watch the qualifying, watch the race. It's good entertainment. And we'll see you on Sunday. So, again, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support and we'll see you on the next one.